Welcome to the Go All In podcast. I'm your host, Robert Bruss, and today on the show, we have Dr. Amy Sanchez, PhD. Amy is a psychologist, a neuropsychologist, award-winning best-selling author, executive coach, and speaker specializing in organizational and business consulting. And she's also a coach for high-performing individuals, teams, and organizations. Let's get started. G'day everyone, I trust that you're well and you and your family and business are also doing well in these crazy COVID pandemic times. Everything's tracking pretty well here in Australia. The restrictions seem to be somewhat in the same place as what they've been for a couple of weeks. So we've got something that looks like a bit of a new norm. So it's kind of all good here in Sydney, Australia. Now, if you haven't already checked out the new Go All In website, I encourage you to pop on over to goallin.com.au and take a look at our brand new hub for startups and entrepreneurs. We've got some great free training over there and lots of giveaways, and we've got a whole bunch more to add in the coming weeks. So pop on over to goallin.com.au to find out some more. Now, if this is your first time here at the Go All In podcast, welcome. It's great to have you here. This podcast is for you if you're just starting out in business, maybe considering a business, or you've been a seasoned entrepreneur for years. My guests and I will give you the strategies and tactics that you need to help you to close the gap from where you are to where you want to be faster than you ever thought possible. To get there, you're going to have to do some hard work. You're definitely going to have to learn some new things, but most of all, you're going to have to go all in. And I created this show, and I do this show because there's nothing more that I like than eliminating roadblocks and shortcutting the path to success. In fact, I can't wait to celebrate your success. So make sure you reach out and you tell me all about your wins via social media or email. Before we get into the show today, just take a little peek at your phone and hit the subscribe button on the app that you're listening in on. And if you're watching this on YouTube, just scroll down and hit the subscribe button there. And don't forget to ring the bell. That way you'll always have some motivation and some Go All In love right there in your pocket. Lastly, if you like what you hear, please share this episode with your friends and your family. Dr. Amy has got an important message to share. She's got a pretty epic story as well. And if we can help just one or two other people to break through their barriers and to get unstuck, then Amy and I would have done our job here on the podcast today. Alrighty, let's get into this one. Dr. Sanchez is a psychologist and a certified executive success coach. She's a speaker and a trainer, and she's specialized in neuropsychology and organizational business consulting for over 17 years. The organizational consulting and leadership development component of her practice is devoted to a holistic transformation approach to leadership. And Amy will teach you how to cover your blind spots, avoid the traps of leadership, and let go of your limiting beliefs forever. I'm excited she's here, so please help me in welcoming Dr. Amy Sanchez. Dr. Amy Sanchez, welcome to the Go All In podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's great to meet you as well. Well, leadership is one of my absolute favorite topics to discuss on the Go All In show. And it's something that I talk about quite often with my guests. And I guess I developed an interest in it after I left the military. I wish I'd kind of known more about it when I was in the military. And looking back in business and reflecting on the people that were in charge of me and above me in leadership positions, I was very fortunate. And I think a lot of that rubbed off on me into my entrepreneurial career and into business and whatnot. And I'm looking forward to discussing that with you here today on the show. But before we get into any of that, why don't you share with the audience a little bit about you, where you're from, and how you got into all of this?
Okay, great. I'm from California, living there now. Originally, I'm from Anchorage, Alaska.
Well, that's a big difference.
It's a big difference, but I think I got to give a shout out to my AK folks. Yeah. So I moved to California to pursue my graduate studies, almost 30 years ago now, mm-hmm. and got into doing psychology. That's my trade. And I specialize specifically in neuropsychology. So I worked for a period of time at a pretty high level for a government entity working in senior management. And even though I wasn't practically using my neuropsych skills there, I was using a lot of business coaching, consulting skills in that role. And then I also had my private practice alongside where I was doing neuropsychology. So I got to the point where the work environment became one of those things where you have more work than you have day.
Yep.
And the balance of the work-life integration thing was a continuous conflict for me. And I found that just there was a number of pivotal moments, but the one that kind of culminated in me making the ultimate shift required that I just move out of that and go back into my practice. And so what I ended up doing was launching a full business journey where I began taking the skills that I learned in neuroscience and neuropsychology into the business realm. And that's how we are here today.
Excellent. And was it an easy transition for you? Because many people find themselves in a corporate career with golden handcuffs there. And it's a little bit scary to take the leap when you don't have any customers. You don't know much about business. Was that scary for you?
Actually, it was a forced choice. And I will say no. It wasn't hard for me in the sense that once I knew the time for the shift came, then it became easier to feel free to move into the next thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good feeling. I had that feeling recently myself. I transitioned out of an agency after about 15 years and into a completely different career. And it was scary as hell for me, but I knew the time was right. And I was like, you know what? I'll just figure it out. I'll figure it out before. I'll figure it out again. I'm young enough to do it 20 times in my life. Yes. No problem, right? Just go for it.
Yes. I think that's what you're speaking to is that temperament that, and I think I have that too. And maybe entrepreneurs have that in general, where I kind of build the plane on the way down. So even though I knew it was going to be scary, I was fully prepared for the ride. And yeah. So that part I was willing to do.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Thanks for sharing that, Dr. Amy. That's good stuff. And it kind of gives us a bit of a segue into the signature question that we ask here on the podcast, which is people come on over to the Go All In podcast to learn more about others that have gone all in. So if you could you please share with us your biggest Go All In story or stories and the lessons that you've learned from your commitment to success?
Sure. Well, as I had mentioned previously, there was a number of pivotal moments that I experienced in my pathway to leadership that kind of brought me here today. And on one of those pivotal moments had to do with the fact that I was working in a position at a very high level for senior management where I felt kind of ill-equipped as a leader. There was a lot of turnover, a lot of fluctuation, and I didn't feel as though I had the skills that I needed to be able to lead my staff in the way that I needed to direct them. So that pivotal moment led me to start investing in my own professional development. And the more that I learned, the more that I wanted to learn. And so it just became easier to be able to do that on a regular basis and kind of incorporate that into my style of leadership. But what I found is that the environment didn't change. It was very chaotic. And then sometimes it was a very toxic environment. And so I found the next lesson, which was a pivotal moment, was that there was a misalignment with my values and that of the organization. And so what it required for me to do is really be somewhat introspective and decide, what are you going to do at this point? Are you going to start creating a pathway out? Are you going to try and work within the situation? Are you going to hope that it's going to get better and you're not going to do anything about it? And so that went on for several years, honestly, where I was going back and forth and it was like this pendulum swing until the third pivotal moment where I'd had a series of five different administrative supervisors in a 10-year period. And with that change came a different shift of leadership, a different shift of focus and mission. And each time I stepped up to the plate, but it was delivering at that 150% excellence quality became one of these things where it was a burnout situation. And so for me, I decided I no longer wanted to be the standard workhorse. I wanted to kind of have visibility. I wanted to have the increased responsibility and actually get credit for what I was doing and get the pay to go with it. And unfortunately, that didn't work out. And what ended up happening was I became the trainer for my replacement. Oh. And so that was the fourth critical moment that led me to the realization that I had marketable skills that were extremely valuable. And as I had mentioned before, I was a parallelpreneur. So I had a business alongside of that. And I had kept the business because I never wanted to feel like I was in a position where I didn't have options.
Yeah.
And so my go all in moment came when I had an exacerbation of a health crisis that almost took my life. And for 9 months, I could not work. And so it required that I do much of the coaching that I had been using on my staff on myself. And during that time, I decided that it was time to transition. I wrote my first book and began being more public speaking around the United States and abroad. And at that point, I decided that this is what I'm going to want to, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life and the rest of my time here. That was my go all in moment, that I no longer was going to stay small and live small, that I was going to live boldly and that there were people waiting on my message.
I love it. I love it. I love how you reflect on the pivotal moments there. I think that's such an important thing for people to do. And this show always looks back at where somebody's come from. That's the idea of it, right? Is to is to share the lesson learned of what you need to do to go all in and to commit and how different people do that. But I think you've really articulated that beautifully, because it wasn't just one thing that made it happen for you. It's a series of events leading up to it that always caused that to actually happen for you as well. You mentioned there that there was a misalignment in your values in the workplace there. And I know that was a long time ago for you, but do you remember, was that like a heartfelt thing that was happening for you there? Or was it you rationalizing, like, something's not feeling right in my body? I'm going home going, man, you know, something's not right there. But in your head, you're like, no, I can do this. I can break through this. I've got the skills. I can pay the bills. I'm good. Was it heartfelt or head felt?
It was a little bit of both, because honestly, I started there very young. And then left and then came back. And so the older I got, the more it was this thing like, okay, something's not right, but it'll be okay. You know, I got bills to pay. I got a family to feed, right?
You're rationalizing it. Yeah.
Yes. And then it was like, can I do another 20 years of this? Like, I don't think so. And that was it. Like, there was this thing where I had it. That's why I said it was a forced choice. What's more important, you leading to the point of exhaustion or leading to the point of giving your health away or losing your family? Like, what is the priority here? And so I really had to wake up. I had to make a choice.
Yeah. Why do you think in the corporate space, and you've worked there extensively, obviously, and you work with a lot of different businesses, and it's a go all in kind of question as well, is that the more advanced a career gets in the corporate world, you describe that accurately, the less personal time you seem to have for some reason. Why is that? Why do we let that happen to ourselves?
I think because I think for myself and for many of the people that I've coached, and it's been thousands now, there's this mental picture of what success looks like. And the closer you get to that vision, the more that you hold to it.
Yeah.
And so this is why when I work with folks and we're coming and this is the issue, you know, I'm burnt out or there's no integration in work and life, or I just pivoted out or whatever the thing is, we come back to values. What are the values that drive you? Because you're a creature of habit, right? And you've been kind of beating yourself into submission when you've been in something that's been out of alignment. So what are the core values that drive you? Because that's the sticking point that's going to keep you on that straight path.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience when you talk about values and a misalignment there, right towards the very end of my life in agency land, if you like. I had a job go desperately sideways on me, 100% my fault. I completely own it. And what had happened is I bought into the client's BS, and he was like squeezing me on price, and I'm like, felt sorry for him. He was a really nice guy. Everything was really good. And so I bought into his BS of him not having enough money to do the job. And I took the budget that he had and I did the best that I could. And very quickly that went sideways on me because there just wasn't enough money in the deal. So I had to jump in and I had to move the project manager out of the way and I had to do some stuff. And it was just all really, really messy. And then one day he called me and he said, "Hey Rob, how's the job going?" And I said, "It's going okay. It's not bad. We're having a few challenges here, but we're working through that." And he said, "Hey, I want to come swing by and pick you up and take you for lunch." And he swung by in his fancy $150,000 Mercedes, picked me up and took me out for a $400 lunch. And I was sitting there at lunch eating my fancy lunch thinking, you know what? this is really nice, but I can't believe that I bought into your BS of not having any money. And I was just, yes. I was not angry with him. I was not angry with him. You know, I celebrated his success, yes. And, you know, I was appreciative of him buying me a delicious lunch and whatnot. But I can remember getting back to the office and, you know, going back to the grindstone of my desk and my mouse and my keyboard and just thinking, you hook, line, and sinker. You took the whole thing. And it was just a misalignment there. And after that had finished, I was like, you know what? Yes. I'm done. I'm out.
It's a sobering moment, huh?
Oh man, that's
where you're like, if I get out of this in one piece, I will never do this to myself again.
You know, it's not like a slice of humble pie, you know, like a little piece of triangle. Someone like threw the pie in my face.
Yeah, the whole pie.
Yeah, cop that, pal. Cop that. That's funny. That's good. Amy, if someone's standing on the very edge of the abyss, wondering whether they should go all in and commit or stick with what they're doing, what would you say to give them a little nudge over the edge and say, take the leap? You never know.
Yeah, I always have to say, bet on you. When you put your future, when you put your prognosis regarding your condition, your life and your future in someone else's hands, then you become beholden to them and the decisions that they decide on your behalf. So I have to say, you know, bet on yourself.
I love it. I absolutely love it. If you're not building your dreams, you're going to be building somebody else's dreams, baby. That's the way I like to put it. And
that's right.
Never a truer statement. All right. You mentioned there before, as you had that health challenge and you wrote your first book. And as I was doing a little bit of research for this interview, I love the title of your book. And before we get into this, to the leadership stuff, I want to talk about the books, because you've got Disrupt the Status Quo, Living and Leading from Your Success Zone. And I was like, listen to some music as I was doing some research for the interview here. And I'm like, I'm in the zone. I'm not in the success zone. I'm in the research zone. And I was kind of like, it was a little bit funny, and I thought maybe I'll get Amy to talk to us about the success zone and what that means to you and how you came up with that.
Yeah, I think, I guess it's a very intuitive thing that I was thinking about initially that I ended up having to put into a process and formulate it for people. But for me, it's this energy around knowing that you're bringing your A game. What are the things that you thrive at doing? What are the things that are not per se easy for you, but where you feel that you are performing at your best, your optimal? That's the success zone. And really, it's about peak performance in all areas, right? Productivity, emotional performance, all of it.
Nice. So I love the concept of the A game, and that's said a lot in the military. You got to bring your A game, because the military is not like any other job, but it's like every other job that is out there. And all that happens is it has a way of amplifying the things that can go wrong, because the things that can go wrong, you're either going to get hurt really badly or you're going to get blown up, shot, or killed.
Exactly. And
that's so everything is amplified. So you better bring your A game. And
yes,
you know, I was talking to somebody the other day about planning and how you should have a proper plan, but you should also have the flexibility to adapt in the event that things change. And I was telling them a story about, you know, we were being briefed to go out on an op, and we're going to walk out the front gate and we're going to turn right. And I was on point. I was the guy leading the patrol, and we would walk down here. We would go left, right. We'd go up into the bush here, and we'd blah, blah. And that's how it was. And it's like, this briefing went on for ages and ages. For some reason, it took forever to go through. And I remember, okay, let's get your gear. You know, we're going. And I put my equipment on, and I stood at the sandbags. I put a magazine in my rifle. I cocked my rifle, went out the front gate because I was the first guy. And the boss goes, "Hey, Rob, go left, mate." I'm like, "But we've just been in a briefing for an hour to go right." And he goes, and I look behind him like, what are you talking about? He goes, "Go left." And I thought, well, this is the time that I really have to bring my A game. And the briefing kind of lulled me into a bit of a false sense of security that I knew what was going to happen and I was okay and I could follow that plan and everything was going okay. But the best plan in the world doesn't survive the first contact. As soon as somebody fires at you or something goes wrong that you're not expecting, the whole thing turns into a giant mess. And, you know, it's absolutely no different in the civilian world, in business, and in life. just the military has a way of amplifying it because you're holding a gun and, you know, someone's trying to kill you in the process. But it's really interesting concept of bringing your A game and staying in that success yes. zone. And I love that. The other part of that as well is in aviation. So I fly little airplanes for fun, and I've got a bunch of mates who are pilots and that as well. And you really got to bring your A game there. There's just no excuses. If somebody was wanting to get into their success zone and bring their A game, but they're not running around with a gun or flying an aeroplane or something like that, right. What are some things that they could do? That's obviously what your book's about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, some of the things that I suggest people do, again, that values thing, identifying what the values are that drive you, because that's the science, if you will, behind the behaviors, the things that you're more likely to do, the reasons why you do the things that you do. And then I believe it's also important to really take an assessment and evaluation of your skill set and find the areas that you have natural strengths in, the areas that maybe if you added a little this or a little that, you could make it into a strength, and then the stuff that's just a challenge for you that you're probably not ever going to get good at, right? The stuff that you maybe should delegate or get someone to help you with. But I'm talking about leading in from an area of strength. And so when you know that you have this short side or this blind spot, like you were saying, is to prepare for that, prepare that backup plan A through G, so that you're never left being caught off guard or exposed or what have you, but feel free to lead from strength and then be creative and innovative as you do that. Don't fall into the complacency or the drift.
Yeah, I love. Oh my gosh, that is just so easy to fall into that trap, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And that word drift that's really poignant for me. Sometimes people say things that trigger things into me, and I'm just drifting along in life. Come on, Rob. Get your act together, mate. Come on. Yeah, yeah. Amy, recently I had an accident, and it was 6 weeks ago yesterday, and I got pretty badly banged up and hurt. You wouldn't know from looking at me now, but I'm still in like a fair bit of pain and whatnot, but I'm okay. And I kind of, I got out of the hospital and I got out of bed the day after I got out of hospital, and where I live, I can see the sun come up over the ocean, and it's beautiful. And I had this moment of clarity, and I saw the sun come up, and I went, wow, look at that. I'm in the bonus round. I better make the most of it. And I say that I'm in the bonus round because as I kind of reflect on my life, as you reflect on the pivot points of your life, as you did earlier in this interview, I reflect on the near-death experiences that I've had, the motorbike crashes, the parachute malfunctions, you know, the bad stuff that's gone on in my life. It's nearly ended, you know, half a second this way or a second that way, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you type thing. And I'm like a cat, and this is round number 9, and I figure this is the bonus round. And as I was, researching for this interview, I saw the title of your second book is Success Starts Today. Yeah. And that's never been more true for me. Those three words have never been more true for me now than at any time in my life. And it is so unbelievably true. And it's such a strong statement. Can you tell us about that book?
Yeah, I hear you. That's exactly the experience that I had after I came out of that health situation, is that the gratefulness, the gratitude to be able to have a chance to start over again and to be able to go forward with the idea that you're going to do so even more intentionally, mm-hmm. right? And for me, it was this sense of urgency that I had spent some time not being as productive as I could on my purpose path. And now that I was course correcting, that I had some time to make up for. And so Success Starts Today is about that journey. It's about being able to remember the why, remember that people matter, remember that, you know, why it is that you're doing what you're doing. So that, like we were saying before, you will never get to the situation that you were where you give over your power to somebody else, or you devalue your worth, or you do these things that put you in a situation where you become resentful about where you are in life. And so that's what Success Starts Today is about. It's kind of an ode or a nod to leaders to remember that, so that if you are experiencing that drift, if you are a bit complacent, that there's always time to start over and do something different. It's never too late.
I love it. I love it. It's a really beautiful reminder, and it's a nice sentiment as well. My partner, a couple of years ago, she was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, and Unfortunately, she's an asthmatic as well. And the medicine that they give you to treat rheumatoid arthritis lowers your immunity system. And she nearly died a couple of times because she got a cold, just like common cold because of the asthma. And I can remember one day scooping her up and taking her out of bed, you know, like carrying her and taking her to hospital. And like, it's like a first aid course, you know, you come across the patient, what do? Save a life. And I scooped her up and took her to hospital and saved her life. And what I said to her at the end of all of that was, you're either going to die from a common cold, like an AIDS victim. It's like ridiculous, or we're going to find a solution. And we came across Wim Hof and all cold water therapy. And luckily enough, we live right by the ocean. And it was hell for a couple of winters of going in the cold water. But what it did is it fixed the inflammation in her body, because that's what rheumatoid arthritis is. It weaned her off the medicine that she needed to take, and she got into remission, and all from diet and cold water therapy. And what we discovered was, and I'm coming to my point here, what we discovered was every single day that we would work through the challenge that she had with her health, and some days were better than others when she was first diagnosed. And then when we realized what was wrong, we realized that every day it's like you press the reset button on your health. So whatever you put in your mouth is going to trigger that inflammation in your body. So you bloody well put the right thing in your mouth and not trigger that. And it's a really good metaphor for life. Is that every single day you get to press the reset button on your health, on your fitness, on your emotions, on your finances, on absolutely everything. And your success really does start today.
Yes, that's beautiful. I love that.
All right, I want to transition into the topic of leadership. Let's get to the meat of the podcast here. This is where the rubber meets the road, and my favorite part of it. And you talked a little bit there at the start about your experience in the organization of starting to invest in yourself in leadership training, but it was still chaos around you and a whole bunch of things that were happening there. One of the things that I come across all the time when I talk to people about leadership, because they ask me, because they know about this podcast, and they're like, hey, what can I do? How can I be a bit better? What can I do? It's not, everyone wants a hack and everyone wants a tip and something to do. But one of the things that I see a lot, and you would see it as well in what you do, and I'm looking for your kind of comments on it, is that leaders rarely get feedback.
Yes.
It's very hard for a leader to get feedback in an organization. The feedback is things are going good or things are going bad. And sometimes the feedback that they get is determined by the numbers on their balance sheet. But that's not leadership. That's kind of management. And getting feedback on your leadership is a really hard thing. If someone's listening to this and they're a leader in an organization, what's a way that they can get a bit of feedback, maybe from themselves to reflect on something or ask some questions of others, of their peers?
Yeah, those are great questions. I think if you're in the position where you have influence over others or maybe supervising others, there's sometimes what we call 360-degree assessments that you can do, where you kind of get some feedback from your direct reports as well as your supervisors on how you may be performing. But if you don't want to be that formalized about it, what I always did is I always encourage people to have open door policies, to have opportunities, to have team meetings, to maybe have it be so comfortable for your staff to be able to access you, come to you. And really what you're doing there is you are expanding upon your credibility with those stakeholders, because they see you as someone who's accessible and not just a representation of administration.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That's really beautifully put. There's a bunch of traps that you can be drawn into as a leader. I never want to be in my organization. I never want to be surrounded with people that are just telling me yes all the time. Mm-hmm. I want people to not challenge the status quo so much, but challenge the ways of doing things. If I come up with an idea and give command intent and give directive about where we're going on something, I want somebody to go, well, actually, did you know that we could do it this way? Because this is a different way of doing it. Have you considered these things? And I've got a great bunch of people. I've got about 10 people around me that do that consistently. And sometimes I feel like I painted myself into a corner. Sometimes I'm like, just do as you're bloody told.
Yeah.
And sometimes I say that facetiously in a meeting and they're like, oh, all right, we'll do that. We'll do it your way. That's cool. But I always say to them, but if you think there's a better way and a faster way of doing it, just do it. Like, right. Don't ask me. Like, I don't care. Just get it done sort of thing. I give you the, I feel like I decentralize the command structure enough to
right.
do that, but do it my way anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, what are some traps? You know, that's a bit of a funny one, but there's some real
ones. Yeah. You know, I think one of the traps you kind of mentioned was that thing about not getting clear feedback, right? Because what can happen is because you don't provide clear feedback and it's vague, people don't know what to expect and they don't know how to execute. So one of the traps that can happen is they see you as a less than credible leader because you don't give clear direction.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Tell me why is there a difference? Why is there a difference between management and leadership? That's a big question, I know. And people ask me all the time, you know, I've got this person who's in a management position. They're really good at what they do. They're good at executing on their job, but they're terrible with the staff. And yes. they're a bit mean or nasty, or they're a little bit too passive. Yes. It always seems to be, there's no common ground in the middle. It's always down one end of the scale or the other. And it's sort of like, well, that's because you've got them in a management / leadership mm-hmm. position. Maybe you need to divide the role and put mm-hmm. them, so a leader above them and keep yeah. that role. But I don't have enough money to do that. How do I yeah. solve that problem?
Well, I think you have a practical problem there in that the distinction between the two is very different, right? And everyone is at their own they're at their own stage in the process of leadership in regards to their journey. But I think if you think about it as far as a mental picture, you manage things, you lead people. So when you are a manager, you have a tendency to focus on tasks and things rather than developing relationships and being relational. And so that's oftentimes what I think people miss in that whole process that creates a lot of angst with their staff and a lot of conflict because you think you're directing a task and you're focused on the tactical rather than the relationship. And then people are saying, hey, you know, that approach doesn't work with me. And then you've got the pressures from above that are expecting things to be executed in a certain time. And so it just can make for a very bad situation. So oftentimes when I'm working with leaders to help them develop their staff to work on themselves, self-awareness is one of the places that we start because we know that, you know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, right? Mm. And so we start with self-awareness because if you can put yourself in the other person's shoes, then you can maybe think of how to lead better.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. Beautifully, beautifully articulated and said by the professional right there. I love that a lot. One of the things that I reflected on recently in my time, my last posting in the Army was at the Australian Army Parachute School. And there wasn't very many of us. There's probably around, I think about 10 or 15 instructors there from memory. And I was part of a thing called Airborne Platoon. And what we would do is we would support the instructors who would train the students that would come in. So there'd be like 300 students that would come in and we would help the 20 or so instructors run those courses, corral the students and do all those sorts of things. So it wasn't really an administrative job. It was very, very hands-on. It was very practical. And I was lucky enough to do all the free fall courses as well. So once I got my free fall quals, we would help all the special forces guys come through and help them run all of those courses and whatnot. And one of the, because I was looking back at the leadership of that school and how, what a well-oiled machine it was. And it's funny, you know, as a civilian now, I look back and think of combat operations and you think that parachuting into an enemy target would be a really easy thing to do. And that's a really sensible way to insert people to get a job done. But in fact, airborne operations are the most complicated operations you can do in the military. They're more complicated than anything else that's out there because there's so many moving parts. Think of the airplane that has to be serviceable and ready to go and all the people and the troops and the pilots and the air crew and then all of the troops need to be trained and you're getting people from point A to point, oh my gosh, it's no wonder airborne operations are rarely, rarely used. And when I think back of my time there at the school, that was such a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. It was rare that planes broke. It was rare that things went wrong. And part of it was the command structure there was really good at having, the leadership there was really good at building relationships up the chain of command, but also down the chain of command where I was. So I had incredible relationships with the people that were senior to me. And normally in an infantry battalion, I would never talk to the commanding officer. There's no, he might say hello to me here and there, but that would be pretty much it. I would never talk to the XO. I would never talk to the RSM or to those people senior. But at the parachute school, those folks spoke to all of us. And even though, because we're a smaller unit and you're a tighter unit, I can remember running physical training sessions and the commanding officer being there and thinking, mm-hmm. well, the CO of the battalion was never there when I was doing that. And looking back at that, that was a really good, that was one of the lessons that rubbed off on me, I think, without realizing just because you're the boss and you're in charge, it doesn't mean you can't build relationships down the chain of command. And that held true when they would say, boys, got to work late tonight. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the boats out. We're going to go and pick up the guys out of the ocean. They're doing their night quals, whatever we're going to do, right? So it worked really well from that perspective. And I was looking, maybe you could comment on building relationships because you've talked about that a little mm-hmm. bit, but building it down the chain of command as well.
Yeah, that's very good. Usually what I talk about in this regard anyway is I focus very heavily on being able to cultivate relationships so that if you need to and consistently want to, you can leverage community. Yep. And so I talk about that in the sense of influence, how influence is a multifaceted process. And that if you dialed in on that influence piece, you've mastered that, it'll allow you to be effective as a leader in three important ways. First, you can lead strategically because you're able to lead across the course of the organization. You're able to have a seat at the table. You're also able to lead down because now you're able to get the buy-in of key stakeholders. And then you're able to lead, you know, yourself well when you also take the time to develop in yourself. And so when we talk about getting that buy-in from key stakeholders, I think that's very important. Building those relationships, thinking about having relationship currency and kind of closing the gap so it doesn't feel as though there's so much distance between what you do and what the people that are your direct reports are doing. And even if you're a part of a large company, it's creating the image or the semblance or the experience of intimacy with your staff is going to be key. And you can do that by being a culture carrier, driving culture.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Building that, you said currency. I like the word capital. Mm-hmm. You build leadership mm-hmm. capital, and at some point you bring on that home to roost and you spend that capital and spend that currency, right?
Mm-hmm. You sure do.
Okay, Dr. Amy, I can't talk to you about leadership without talking in the modern workplace about emotional intelligence. And, you know, leaders these days are very different to the leaders that have gone by from the 1980s and 1970s type thing. And people say to me all the time, hey, Rob, it's easy for you to be disciplined. You were in the military. And it's like, nah, man, the military is the most undisciplined place you've ever been because it's full of a bunch of ratbag people that can't get a job anywhere else. So they go and get a crappy government job. I'll say it how it is, right? I'm just joking. That's not true. But it has been true. There's been elements of that I have seen. And a lot of people talk about discipline in the military because they think, you know, you're a bunch of Terminator robots. But the reality is they use a carrot and stick methodology. And be there at that time with that hat in that uniform or else. And mm-hmm. over a period of time in your training, that kind of is dulled down because you get more seniority. But as you get older in the military, mm-hmm. you get a little bit tired of being told what to do and where to be and what to do and things like that. And when I look back and I reflect on my time in the military, my 10 years in the Navy and the Army, I look at that and think, those people had no emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. They had no awareness of the way that they were communicating to us. And it's the military. That's totally mm-hmm. fine. But being in the military doesn't excuse you for being a jerk. Mm-hmm. No, there's just no excuse for that leadership style, mm-hmm. irrespective of the job that you have and the organization that you're in. Because I think you could be more effective building relationships when you have better emotional intelligence. Maybe you can talk about that and your experience with it in the workplace.
Yeah, you know, I think that thing about emotional intelligence is especially interesting because, like you said, before you knew what you were dealing with, you just thought people were jerky, right? Yeah. And you know that there's jerky people in the world, so it's not one place in particular, but you maybe just don't understand why it is. Why does this person have such a problem? Are they power hungry? Do they not know how to talk to people? Do they not like women? Do they not like men? Depends. You know, you don't really know. But this issue of emotional intelligence kind of takes the weight off the individual and focuses on helping people to understand how to interpret nonverbal cues and be really not just self-aware, but aware of their environment. And so I think emotional intelligence has its value in that the more that people can start interacting with one another in real human ways and using self-awareness, that it can drive business outcomes in a very successful way. I mean, as you're seeing, the world is kind of imploding, if you will, over some of the conflicts that are going on, and things like diversity, equity, inclusion are becoming very big priorities for companies. Things like emotional intelligence are going to be key here to helping these companies that have not been able to have inclusive environments make that shift.
Amy, what do we say to the people out there that are hearing us talk about emotional intelligence and EQ, and they're like, oh God, another one of these conversations? Like, that's a trigger. That's a trigger for a lot of people.
It is.
Like, really, just can't you just come to work and get on with your job and do what you need to do? Come on, like, what do we need all this EQ and equity and diversity training and unconscious bias training for? Mm-hmm. What? And I've got a foot in both camps. I'm like, mm-hmm. I get it. I understand. Mm-hmm. I empathize with that position. Mm-hmm. But if you take a couple of minutes to just to understand what your EQ is and what mm-hmm. that means and how that can improve your leadership and just mm-hmm. you as an individual, it's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
What would you say to all the detractors?
Yeah, I would say the same thing. And I think I would have to come to the meat of it. Like, if you're operating from a base of integrity as a leader, that this is something that just becomes part of the landscape. This is your due diligence to the people that you supervise. And if you model good leadership, it'll be reflected. So maybe, hey, 40 years from now, we won't have to think so heavily about emotional intelligence, because the ripple effect is that it's become part of the culture. But right now, it feels like you are intelligent, emotioned to death, because we're learning, we're being educated about it. And that's what's required at this point.
Yeah, it's the leveling up of consciousness inside of the workplace, isn't it? It's some version of that, I think, there. Amy, how do you help organizations with their leadership and their EQ training? And what do you do specifically?
Yeah, so a lot of times what I do is I'll go in and provide some type of training workshop or do a webinar series or something like that to provide a psychoeducational or educational element to it. And then we also do different types of assessments and tools to evaluate to what degree we may need to use more methods to help kind of innovate the culture there. And then we do a lot of sometimes just cultural transformation techniques, where we may do different exercises or strategies to get people engaged in the process. So like you said, it doesn't become so drone and boring, where people find new ways to explore some of these concepts.
Yeah, nice. It's important work that you're doing. Is there a little win that you can share with us? Maybe as an example, like you took an organization from point A to point Z because they were just terrible. Sometimes you mentioned right at the top of the show, there's some toxic workplaces that you've been part mm-hmm. of. And I think we've all been part of a workplace or an organization like that at some point in our lives. And we've detached ourselves from it because of that very reason. Have you ever gone in there and fixed something like that? That must be a good accolade to have.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, I was able to work with the organization on a very kind of visible, large level, where they didn't have any kind of professional development series specifically for women leaders. And so I was able to go in and work with their staff and create that series of topics that touched on all these issues we've talked about today. And through the course of that, we were able to train about 1,000 women through.
Oh, wow.
That took their training back to their organizations. And so that impact was even larger. And so that was a great win, because from what I had heard, they'd never had such a great turnout for that level of training, and they'd never had such positive feedback. So that means that people were getting the information in a way that was different than they'd ever experienced it before.
What's that feel like for you? Winning?
That feels great. Like, I feel like I made my little, you know, footprint there.
I made my mark on the world properly.
Yes. I'm far away from where I started, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's the ideal sort of client that you want to work with? Do you want to work with individuals or corporate, small business, or large?
I enjoy doing both. I think that's just my personality, that I enjoy staying busy and doing things that really drive my motor. So I like doing anything that massages around groups and creating transformation. I also like working on the individual level and helping people develop awareness. I've created a series of programs for women leaders to help them learn how to position for promotion and speak up at work and be able to negotiate for better pay. And that has been kind of inspired by my own experience. And so I really enjoy what I think this is the sweet spot right now. Like you're saying, I'm in the bonus round. And so it's all good at this point. So if there are folks out there that have an interest in contacting me, I work with individuals, teams, and organizations.
Fantastic. Dr. Amy, it's been an absolute pleasure to have this conversation with you, and I'm certain that we could talk some more about that. Maybe we should plug in a follow-up episode to talk about some specific topics, because I'd really love to explore that with you a little bit more. But as we're bumping up against 45 minutes here, I'm going to kind of close out the podcast here by putting you in the Go All In Podcasters hot seat.
A little bit of fun
to close it out and do that. You know, one of the favorite things that I used to, I still love doing, but this crazy pandemic has caused a whole lot of drama for us, is travel. And I always love to speak with my international guests and ask them, what should an Aussie like me be putting on his bucket list? Where's one of the favorite places you've ever been that I probably have never heard of?
Oh my gosh. I've been to places you've heard of, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But have you been to Disneyland?
Yes, when I was 8.
Okay. See, I have small children, so my life is very much little people in little people places.
My kids are almost all grown up. One's 19, one's 18, and the other one's about to turn 14. And I'm like, the 14-year-old, come on, man, get out.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you're way ahead of me. Have you ever been to Anchorage, Alaska?
No, that's definitely on the list.
Okay, you got to go there. Yeah. And then you've got to do the boat ride that takes you through the upper half of the state all the way through Canada. I think you'd really enjoy that.
Yeah, just beautiful in nature and whatnot. That's definitely on the list for sure. Nice. Hey, Dr. Amy, what's a skill that you're working on at the moment that you haven't quite mastered yet?
Oh my gosh, a skill that I'm working on that I haven't quite mastered yet. Jeez. I don't know. I would think it have to do something technical. This online thing is really, it's different. I had a brick and mortar business for so long. Mm. So the online space is something that I've had to have this learning curve. Yeah. And so that is all of the things that I'm taking in right now, is all the back end technical things.
Have you mastered Zoom?
Yes. Unless you tell me I have it.
Have you mastered Zoom with 150 people and breakout rooms and all sorts of things like that?
Well, yeah, I'm homeschooling. So, you know, it's the new normal.
I love it. Awesome. All right. Last one for the hot seat. What's the best piece of business advice that you've ever received?
Wow. The best piece of business advice I ever received was do good work.
Yeah. I love it. Nice and simple and very, very true. Amy, if people want to connect with you, before we give them the details of that, you've got a bunch of programs on your website. Maybe you can just share a little bit about those programs.
Sure thing. The main program, the signature program that we have, is a group program called Rewired for Great Success for Women Leaders. And that is a 16-week program that helps women do as I said, learn how to position for promotion, speak with more confidence, and negotiate for better pay. And it's 4 months of mindset and skill building training. And then we also have a career confidence program, which is an 8-week program, which we'll be sharing more about here in a few weeks. And that program is geared towards helping you have more confidence in your career journey, and doing that in 8 weeks to accelerate your business outcomes as well as your career outcomes.
I love it. And if people want to get a copy of that or connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yes. So it is a link for Dr. Sanchez CC-webinar-register. And so I can give that to you as well to maybe put in the show notes for people that need it. Worst case scenario, if you didn't grab that, you can get it at my website at www.dravsanchez.com.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this as a podcast, just take a little peek at the show notes are right there, and all of the links to Dr. Amy's website are there. And I'll put the links to your socials as well. And if you're watching this YouTube, just scroll on down and the details are right there in the show notes. Amy, thank you so much for coming the Golan podcast. That's been a hell of a lot of fun. It's been an absolute blast. And maybe we can plug in a follow-up episode and go deep dive into something more specifics. But before I let you go, I wanted to give you the opportunity for the parting comment, the last piece of wisdom on the show today. What have you got for us?
Okay, here's the parting comment. You can have everything, but you don't have to do everything.
Boom. Well, that's the biggest one of the whole podcast. I love it. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Speaking with you soon. It's bye for now.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. If you want to connect with Dr. Amy, just take a little peek at your phone, and all of the links to her website, socials, and Amy's LinkedIn are right there. So you're not going to have to go poking around in Google for them. They're nice and easy to find. And if you're watching on YouTube, just scroll down and all of the details are right there. Now, as you would know, the world is changing at a faster pace and in a direction that none of us could ever have anticipated. The way that we work, the way that we earn income, and the way that we communicate has changed and is definitely changing. And I think it's here to stay. And my question to you is, are you keeping up with the change, or are you being left behind? Now, if you're just starting out in business, considering a business, or you've been a seasoned entrepreneur for years, then I've created a masterclass that will give you the strategies and the tactics to get you moving, gather momentum, and break through to the next level. If you'd like to find out some more about that masterclass, then hop on over to goallin.com.au and just click on the menu item that says masterclass. Now, if you've got a message or some feedback for the show, you can reach out via the Goallin socials, or you can send me an email at any time. Just visit the website and hit on the contact tab, and you can drop me a message right through the website on the form there. Well, that wraps it up for the show today. So whatever it is that you're working on, whatever you're doing, get busy, get to it, and go all in. I'll see you next time.